gentlemen, this is a special Such Good Shoot interview extravaganza! So join Isaac, Dozer, and Shane in lighting up a cold one and cracking open a joint here on Such Good Shoot!
Yeah.
Awesome. I think we're going well. Welcome, everybody. We got Dirty Dango joining us today, formerly Fandango or Johnny Curtis of WWE, and then a wrestler in Green Mountain Wrestling. Going way
pride,
back.
The pride of St. Albans, Vermont.
St. Albans, Vermont, historically, actually, really quick, is the northernmost battle in the Civil War was fought in St. Albans, Vermont, when a contingent of Confederate soldiers came down from Canada and tried to storm the U.S. from the north and got their asses whooped by a bunch of Green Mountain boys.
No shit.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
So
it's also known for the Battle of Johnny Curtis versus Tarzan Taylor, circa 2001, in front of a strong paid seven.
Wow. So 2001, you must have been still a teenager.
Oh, bro. Those were the only places that would book my skinny ass. It was like Green Mountain Wrestling and PLW, Power League Wrestling, NCW down in Massachusetts and shit. Yeah. So.
What was the independence? I mean, I've seen a couple shows and we talked briefly. I mean, there was guys like the lobster man who's just like got the big lobster claw and is like just a giant motherfucker. What was the indie scene? Because it's not like the indie scene that people are sort of used to.
So back in 99, when I started, wrestling was huge. You know, it was super popular. It was the Attitude Era. So everyone was getting like wanted to be in the wrestling business. So on the indies, it was all like huge grown men, biker guys and shit. You know what I'm saying? So like, it wasn't young athletic kids. Like, you know, there was obviously the Reckless Use and Mike Quackenbushes and guys like that. But there was primarily just a bunch of big motherfuckers clotheslining people. So now it's, you know, it's a little bit different. But I remember when I first started, I was so young looking, they made me wear a mask. So I was the Portuguese Sun Dragon.
I was going to ask about the Portuguese Sun Dragon because I'm like, what, where was it? So that was, okay, so that was like back then and you were wrestling those because that's awesome.
I think I talked about the Sun Dragon on Cabana's podcast like years ago and everyone's talked about it. But
well, it's a great name, first of all.
Well, so I worked for this company down, it's called Yankee Pro Wrestling. Steve Ricard booked it. He was the guy that like brought Scott Hall to the ring when he was all messed up down in the PAL. You guys remember probably
saw that. So that was a scary, really sad moment.
Yeah, so that was pretty messed up. But the PAL and that territory down there, that company was in New Bedford, Mass. Fall River, Mass. Was a lot of primarily Portuguese population.
Yeah.
So they're like, you're too young to work, but you can work, and you don't look like you can beat anyone up. So we'll put a hood on you and call you the Portuguese Sun Dragon. So I was like the local baby face.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's a wild. I lived down in Cape Cod for a while, so like I'm sort of familiar with that Portuguese community, and they're just a bunch of badasses. Like, they're like, I'll beat your ass. I'm a Portuguese, and I'm like, okay,
they don't mess
dude.
Around, bro. Especially yeah, I'm not Bedford.
No, it's just that whole attitude. So how did you go from who found you when you were wrestling up there? How'd you go get signed to Deep South?
I didn't get signed to Deep South. So I was working, indies and, you know, slowly getting into the gym, putting on size, you know, trying not to look like a 15-year-old boy anymore. And, you know, just like any indie guy, any guy that's in a band, you start, you know, branching out, getting booked in different places. We went down to Kenny Doan and I were a tag team guy, Ken Dykstra.
Yeah.
And we would go down to NWA Wildside and work. We went down and got some dark matches in TNA back when they're in Nashville at the fairgrounds. We used to do TV there. And so, you know, you're branching out and just doing different shots and trying to get, you know, into bigger promotions. So eventually, I think in 05 or 06, I just packed my shit up and moved down to McDonough, Georgia without a contract and just started training with Bill. So I had a couple of friends that were signed down there. So just went down, started training, worked at Applebee's at night, and moved in with Mike Knox and Ryan O'Reilly, who's Connor from The Ascension.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the best, bro. It was the best time in my career. You know, just training. And
What were you doing at Applebee's?
Cooking, stealing steaks.
Hell yeah, man! Stealing steaks. Respect. I cook for a living too.
Yeah. So, I think like the week before they shut down Deep South, Johnny came through and gave me a contract. So like I was ready. I was like out of money, ready to head back to Maine.
Wow.
And like just out of luck, Johnny came down and I did a tryout match. True story. So I'm wrestling this guy named Keith Walker from Chicago. Brother pulls me up in a vertical suplex, pulls out my rig, my shit, my dick's out. I'm like, oh man, this is the most embarrassing thing ever. And then I got signed. So I guess, yeah.
Johnny was impressed.
He was impressed. Yeah.
But, speaking of which, down at Deep South, did Heath mention having to deal with seeing Jody Hamilton's package all the time?
Yeah. Coach Hamilton. Yeah, Jody, the assassin, man. He, there's a lot of history with that guy. So, like, you know, it's some of the younger guys, he's just like this old guy, you know, and Nick Patrick's dad, who's a famous, obviously, WCW ref.
Yeah, absolutely. But and ran Nick's, the power plant.
The Assassins were, like, one of the biggest tag teams in the 50s and 60s. I think they sold out Madison Square Garden. Jody did when he was, like, 17.
Wow. So like, wow.
If you Google and just look at the Assassins, they were, like, a huge tag team in the 60s and 70s, maybe even the 50s, I think. But, yeah,
so no, cool.
But he would sit there and, you know, just critique our matches, and his shorts would, you know, be riding up. And just, you know, and just everyone's staring at his cash and prizes.
Oh man,
that's where I met, man, down Deep South. He just got signed right around the same time that I did, and then they shut down the whole developmental system and moved us all down to Tampa, and then that's why Heath and I moved in together. So Heath and I kind of started together and traveled together when we were on the main roster, so him and I are really close.
That's cool. So you guys shared the house, the house, yeah. That would every time you would leave seem to get broken into, and they stole your dryer or something, your washing machine.
The house of horrors. Yeah.
What was the change like going to FCW and then working with guys like Dusty down there? And
yeah, just Deep South was very fundamental in terms of. When I first got there, it was Bill, who I owe a lot to, you know. Bill gets a bad rap, but he weeded out the people that really didn't want to be there. And, you know, I was going through the same training as the guys were getting paid to, and I wasn't complaining. I think when you go through hell like that, it creates a good camaraderie between the boys, you know. And when you're kind of going through hell like that, it's some real boot camp training. It brings the boys together, you know, and the girls. And we were a tight unit down there. There's the Major Brothers, Knox, Ryan O'Reilly, Bradley J, DJ Wilson, Natty, Opie.
Wow.
You know, so we were a tight crew, but really, when Dr. Tom came in is when I really started to really get better, you know. And Brad Armstrong was there for a little while, and Dave Taylor, who I saw like a month ago, really, really taught us a lot, you know. And but it was very fundamental. So when we got down to FCW, it was more TV. So like, you know, a lot of us never, you know, we really never worked TV before. So working towards cameras, promos, were kind of a foreign thing to a lot of us. So Dusty took a liking to me, and I think about it a lot now, just being, you know, I was a young, like 24-year-old punk kid, and I wish I didn't have such an attitude. You know, I was kind of a hothead back then. So I wish I listened a little bit more to what Dusty had to say, you know. But he had a knack for judging people's characters. I think any good coach, whether it's baseball or football or wrestling, he knew how to individually kind of understand everyone's different personality and coach them differently. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everyone needs to be coached differently. So not everyone, I'm a good soldier. So I took to Bill's training really well. Cause I can take that drill shit.
Yeah.
A lot of people shut down when they get yelled at. So Dusty knew how to understand each individual talent's personality and coach them accordingly. And that's a gift that a lot of coaches, you know, only the good coaches have. So, he took me under his wing and he taught me a lot about cutting promos and speaking and less is more, you know, and getting your message across. Because look at Dusty's promos. He didn't have to say a lot, but what he said, he emphasized. And he took you on a roller coaster ride with his words.
Oh, God, he's the best.
That's why Cody's so good, you know. Cody's got one of the best promos right now, you know. I enjoy his shit a lot. So, you know, Dusty was great, man. He developed a lot of good guys. Look at, like, Bray Wyatt, Sheamus, Drew. You know, just everybody. Just about everybody is a top guy or girl now. It came through Dusty. So.
Yeah, he was – I mean, there's a reason he was a legend. Must have been really – I mean, yeah, especially now it's been, you know, a while since he's left. But, like, what a great experience. And, you know, just being able to take that time and absorb as much as you can, even as a hothead.
You know, like, it's just it goes – I remember Devon Dudley telling me one time, it goes by quick. So, like, sometimes you have to step away to realize kind of what you had. So, like, when you're in the middle of going to class every day with Dusty Rhodes and Norman Smiley and Dr. Tom and Ricky Steamboat, even now, like, Sean and Hunter, you kind of take it for granted, you know? Like, you're going to fucking Harvard school.
Yeah.
And sometimes you wish you you know, you weren't like a young punk kid and you listened a little bit more. You didn't talk back quite as much, but
it's like, if I could do it all over,
you know, but that comes with experience. So
of course, like anything in life. Well, that's awesome. And I mean, how much of that time did you spend? I mean, was that just developing the Johnny Curtis and the Jonathan Curtis character? Or has that sort of been developed?
The whole critique on me in FCW was, he's a good hand, good look, good worker, no personality. So I think I was just that young kid that was a good wrestler. You know what I'm saying? Like, they compared me to Brad Armstrong a lot. It was just a good wrestler, you know, and I was kind of lacking that character. And I think we did the NXT season 4.
Yeah.
When they brought, it was like Titus, or not Titus, it was
Brodus was there, and you had R-Truth, I think, right? Was your
Truth? Yeah. So, yeah, you guys knew it was on the show. I think being thrown into situations where you don't overthink stuff. So, like, I think sometimes we get nervous about cutting promos, so we're in the back going over and over and over, you know, and it's just regurgitated verbiage. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, when you're just put in a situation where, like, they put a microphone in front of your face, how do you feel about that? Your natural personality can come out because you're not overthinking a promo. You can just kind of speak.
Yeah.
And if you got a personality, it comes out. If you don't, it doesn't. So, like, I think that's a hard thing to translate. And some people, it's just like, I think some of the promos are so micromanaged that
it
stifles the natural catchphrases that came out in the 90s. So, like, a lot of, like, catchphrases and guys' natural personality weren't written. It just kind of came.
Yeah, it just was natural.
And that's the organic shit that gets over. I think that season 4 kind of, like, I leaned away from just being a good wrestler and started to have a little bit more personality, you know? So that helped a lot.
Yeah, you talk about getting away from those moments where you get away from the script. And, you know, like, I talked to Heath about that, and some of those were the moments that really defined his career, like the I've Got Kids thing. And, like,
exactly. Just, so, like, you know, you can't write someone's catchphrase for them.
Yeah.
It has to be one of those moments where you just kind of, you almost keep throwing shit against the wall, you know, and just something comes out, and that comes with the crowd. If they're into it and then they go with it, then you got something there, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, all of us were talking about some of the best promos that we heard all year were during the rain delay at WrestleMania when they didn't know what to do. Yeah. So they're just cutting promos.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
It was so good. It was all so good.
Because they weren't walking around the back with a piece of paper in their hand trying to remember their shit because they were worried about getting yelled at when they got to the back.
Yeah, dude.
I'm Look at Austin, man. Like, if you ever listen to Steve talk, he couldn't remember all those lines, but he knew where he had to go, and he knew what bullet points he needed to hit. And that's the way when we do Fashion Files, Breeze and I, like, I can't remember shit. Like, I can't even remember us talking about doing this promo. I can't, or this interview, I forgot about it. So, like, I would ask, you know, we eventually got enough leeway and trust with those Fashion Files we were doing. They were just kind of, where do we need to go? What do we need to hit? And then the rest you kind of fill in. And like, I think like Steve Austin talks about it. He was kind of doing, not like I'm comparing myself to Steve Austin, but some guys are better when they can kind of just do it on the fly, you know?
And that's where the best moments come from. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
What was working with R-Truth like? Did he actually spend much time behind the scenes, like actually mentoring you? What was that?
Yeah, Ronnie's the best, man. So Ronnie, I remember watching Kate Quick on TV in like 98. You guys remember that?
Yes.
Road so like Ronnie's been in the system around that, like that machine since we were kids. So if anyone
looks exactly the same.
He has not aged a fucking day.
He's actually like the Benjamin Button of the WWE. So. But like to be with someone that is that comfortable around the machine, the TV, the cameras, because it's one thing to be a good wrestler, but it's another thing to be acclimated to the TV surrounding. You know what I'm saying? Having a character and being able to speak, how to look at the camera, open up to the camera, how to. If you're doing a shot in a backstage shot, which Ronnie was good at helping me with, if there's two people in there, you know, you need to open up. So coming from the indies and going to TV, there's a lot that you have to learn, and being paired up with someone like Ronnie, I mean, you can't ask for anybody better than that, you know?
That's awesome.
But, and he's a super great guy. I mean, there's a reason why he's been there for 20 years, you know. Vince loves him, everyone else loves him, because he's a good human being, you know. And he's entertaining, you know. Yes. So
yeah,
not every seg on the show has to be blood and guts. You need that let up seg, and there's not that many people that can do it better than Ronnie. So.
Sure. And so what was winning that like? I mean, when they announced the winner in the ring, is that all a shoot? Is that all
real? It was a shoot. Yeah, it was cool, man. And I really thought Derek Bateman was going to win it. Well, I think we all did. And I think they knew that we thought he was going to win it. So they had me go over. But, I mean, I remember winning it. And then they didn't really do anything with Ronnie and I after that. And I remember kind of getting a little bit of an attitude. And that's at my younger age, you know, my younger years when I was a little bit of a hothead. So that's one lesson that I learned, that you can't sell shit backstage, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because it was weird, because you went, you know, like you won that and you were supposed to have your match with Ron for the tag titles, and they immediately scrapped that because he went heel or something. And then you were doing all like the play on word promos, you know, the spilt milk promo, the chip on your shoulder, and the, you know, that takes the cake promo. And it just was like,
I think was a rib on me, because I was selling it backstage. So
yeah. It sort of felt like that.
Yeah, it was. But it was a lesson learned, you know. Yeah. If I could go back now in retrospect, it's the art of the no sell back there. You know, like you can't put shit over. You can't go on Twitter and sell. And 37-year-old me knows that now, but 26-year-old me didn't at the time. So some of those things you have to learn the hard way. You know.
So that, so the Mark Henry thing, same thing. Then that match, same thing.
Yeah, and you know what? That's what Mark told me. He goes, "Don't worry about it, man. It's just tests." You know, and like look at Raw last night. They're probably just testing Cross because they want him to be a big star and they want to see how he plays ball. You know. So
yeah, well, I know a lot of people are upset about it. So
yeah, but a guy like that will be fine, man. As long as you just can't sell it, you know.
Yeah,
and, that makes sense. Hard. It's hard when you know you care so much, you know. It's hard not to sell. It's almost like that fine line of caring but not caring.
Yeah, like how are you supposed to act? Like, are you supposed to care about what you're doing, or are you supposed I'll do whatever.
It's a weird juggling act that, you know, a lot of people don't figure out. You know, there's five guys and a few girls that they're going to use prominently on top all year round, and then the rest of everybody else is just kind of pissed off about their situation. That's just the way it is. So once you come to terms with that and you know your role and you know what you got to do, and as long as you can control your attitude, your gear, and your body, and as long as you can take care of those, you know, just don't sell shit. That's what I tell guys. Just do your job, man, you know.
So what did you think when they came to you with Fandango? Where did that idea come from?
It's funny. It's a weird story. So at the time, my old tag partner, Tyler Rex, him and Gabe, Tyler Rex, and I were tag champs in FCW, and he got called up to ECW around like 2008 or 2009. And he didn't really end up doing too much. And then Kurt Hawkins was kind of floating. So they put Kurt Hawkins, Brian Myers, and Rex together, and they wanted them to come out every week as like firefighters or doctors and do a stripper gimmick, which is kind of like what Breeze and I were doing in NXT. And then so they did it a couple times. I think they debuted once on TV, came out, did some dance, and then I remember the TV, we were in like Texas or something, and Rex just asked for his release. He didn't want to do it anymore. So Hawkins was like, what the fuck, you know. So they were like booked on every live event for months. And then Gabe just didn't want to do it. So, which I can understand. I mean, it's you know, it's his life, it's his career, he can do whatever. It kind of sucks that you're in a tag team, so it reflects.
Yeah, that's hard. That's a
Hawkins went to the office and goes, what about Johnny Curtis? You know, put me with Johnny Curtis. And they go, yeah, that's a good idea. And then the office comes to me and goes, we're just gonna have you do the dancing gimmick, and Myers isn't gonna do it. I'm like, all right.
Oh man, so, talk about shuffling.
And Hawkins,
right,
and Hawkins will tell the story, because Hawkins didn't really want to do it anyways. But if it's one of those things, man, if they come up to you and ask you, do you want to be a cheerleader, and we're going to put you on TV for a year straight, and you're going to be on everything, but you're going to be a stupid gimmick, what are you going to do? So like, I was in the same kind of situation, you know. Like, obviously I wanted them to ask me to be in the Shield, but they're like, Vince really likes his character. I mean, what are you going to say? No.
Yeah. Did you know about Heath pitching the 4MB at that point with you and EC3 Dean Ambrose and him?
So at the time, Mox and I were going to every TV, and we would just sit in the back and do like dark matches and shit. So it was like 2012. And, you know, you just go to TV every week and get a dark match, and they look at you, see if you grew any taller or anything, or, you know, look different than we did last week. But I remember we were sitting in the back, and Heath comes in. He's like, man, I just pitched this idea to Vince. He's like, man, he said, you know what, you are, you know, he's like, I'm a one-man rock band, but I need a band.
I mean, he's like, man.
So he was all fired up because Keith wasn't doing shit at the time. So he's about to get an angle. So he's all excited. He's like, Vince just told me to go pick out two people, and then I'll have a band. So he comes up to, he goes, you want to do it to me? I'm like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. And he asked Ambrose. He's like, yeah, whatever, yeah. And I think EC3 maybe too. So he goes back to Vince, and he's like, no, I got something for him. He's like, he's like Drew McIntyre and Jinder, which was like the weirdest combination, you know. So
yeah, he was like, dude, it sounds like a bad joke. A Southerner and Irishman.
And you know, it's just it's weird because you look at Drew then, and then you look at Drew now, and you look at Jinder then, you look at Jinder now. They're the same guys. They're the same talent. Maybe they're a little bit bigger physique-wise, but it's just perception. That's the weird thing about wrestling is it's like fucking Kramer gets cast into this one role, and you look at him as a joke, but that doesn't mean he's a bad actor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You just get typecast and, sometimes.
You get typecast, yeah. And sometimes they start to correlate your on-screen character with who you are in real life. So like they'll treat you like you're almost a joke because you're playing a fucking joke, you know?
Yeah. So it's like, and sometimes you have to step away and then come back.
Exactly.
So, to be refreshed.
So when they release me, I'll be 40 in a couple of years, but there is some other things and some character shit that I do want to do that I feel like I probably wouldn't be able to do unless I stepped away. And, so obviously you're upset that, you know, you're not going to be getting compensated as well. But as a starving artist that I think we all still have inside of us, you're a little bit stoked that you can go do some shit, you know,
and cut your own promos
and try some different character stuff out.
I'm so excited to see what comes next, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the cool thing too, is, I'm pretty stoked that I get 90 days. Cause that gives you some time to like sit around and think I've been flying every week for years. So it's cool to just kind of relax. But, I played this character that I came up with. It was like a kind of a dirtbag gimmick in, NXT season 4. We did like, there was like a TV show they had in NXT back then. It was like Redemption or something. You guys ever heard of that? So like,
yeah,
it was, they didn't give a shit about it. So we had a TV deal overseas. So they had to keep getting content out. So essentially we just got to do whatever we wanted and cut promos and no one really gave a shit. But I played like a scumbag gimmick on that. And I really enjoyed doing that. So I'm going to maybe try doing something like that. So that was fun.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
I know we're getting towards the end here. I just want to ask about, I know your debut, you get to debut at WrestleMania. You get to have your like real like debut as Fandango at WrestleMania against Jericho. Mm-hmm. He's gone on, he's done his Talking Jericho tour where he's talked a lot about you and that match, and like, you know, at first being like super angry. He's like, who is this guy? And then Undertaker being the one saying, go do it. And him like being like, okay, how do we make this work where we get you over? And are you grateful for Undertaker sort of saying you got to go do this? Do you feel some like resentment towards Jericho?
Look at it from the guy that's stuck in the middle. So I understand Chris's animosity and his legacy and how much pride he has and the years he's put in. Chris is one of the reasons why I wanted to become a professional wrestler. Actually, he debuted at WWF.
Incredible.
That was around the time I was training. I'm like, we were huge Chris Jericho fans in WCW, you know, the whole conspiracy shit, all that. We, you know, all us guys in wrestling school at the time loved Chris. So he was a big reason why I wanted to be a wrestler. So working my first major program with him, you know, obviously you're nervous, you're intimidated, and I didn't want to be a fucking dancer, but I knew that you got to make the best of it. So if I was him, I probably wouldn't be too excited about it too. Maybe he was told he was going to work someone else, which I could see him being pissed off.
Yeah, I know he had talked about just not knowing, and he had wanted to work with Ryback at the time, but like no one had talked to him. And then finally they told him it was you. And he said, yeah, I was upset about it. But then, you know, he after Taker was like, go do it. That was when he sort of changed his mindset and was like, how do we get this character over? You know, like, what do I? And that's when he started doing the, you know, the fun ding dong thing and like, oh, he can't remember your name and trying to get the leg drop over.
And that's a good lesson for me is it's just they're going to give you so much. What can you do to? And I know that more now than I did 10 years ago, because when you get to TV as a younger talent, you just want to do what they're going to tell you to do and say what they write on a piece of paper because you don't want to fuck up. But a guy like Jericho goes, okay, this is what you're giving me, and he's going to take it in his own creative mind and try to make the best out of it, because he generally cares about the stock and his own character and his own brand. Mm-hmm. But as a younger talent, you just want to get through the program without fucking up. So like, that's one thing. If I could go back in time, and it's almost like you can't be afraid to like overstep your boundaries, you know? So that was kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but Chris did an amazing job of getting me over, and I don't blame him. You know, it's a ridiculous character. So you got to look at it this way, guys. So like, Vince thought it was probably stupid that he went on Dancing with the Stars, right? Vince thought Bryan Danielson was crazy to be a vegan. So anything that Vince thinks is stupid, he'll make a character out of it, right? IRS.
No, I mean, yeah, I'm, no, it's real, right? I'm laughing because it's true.
so he thought Chris going on Dancing with the Stars was stupid. So what is he going to do? He's going to make an evil dancing gimmick because he thinks it's outrageous.
That's funny.
So
well, you guys put on a hell of a match. And what was that? What was it like debuting at Mania, getting to have that entrance and that reaction, and then the follow up night, the reaction that you got with your song and the chants and everything that sort of blew up out of that?
You know, I knew once I got in the ring, I'd be cool because that's where I was comfortable. And but I was super, super nervous about the dance routine because that's just foreign to me, you know?
Yeah.
So it takes years and years and years to get good at dancing, you know?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It's like wrestling. And they sent me to dance school for like a month, and they're like, you know, I just barely good enough to be passable. But I remember being super nervous about the routine and like fucking it up. But once that was over, I was cool. And yeah, I remember Vincent wanted us to have a wrestling match. He just wanted Chris to beat the shit out of me for like 5 minutes. They gave us too much time. So the way that it was supposed to be, I think, was like Chris just beats the shit out of me and I roll him up out of nowhere. So it was supposed to be like the biggest upset. Yeah. But I think they gave us like 10 minutes. So it ended up being
more.
Like,
I think it was closer to 15 or something.
Yeah, so it was way too much time for what Vince wanted, I think. And Vince didn't want me to wrestle. He didn't want me to be a wrestler. That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
He just wanted me to be a dancer. So it was this weird, it was a weird situation that I think we pulled it off as good as we could, you know? Yeah. And on me though, I just relied on, in retrospect, in a lesson learned to any young talent out there that's listening, don't rely on what's getting over now. Think about what I can do next. So guys, you know, and I didn't do that. So that's why you just assume that they're going to keep writing shit for you because you're getting reaction. But unless you create a good rapport with the boss and the writing team, you're always coming up with new ideas and pitching stuff and, you know, direct, you know, being proactive about your character, eventually, unless you're that tippy top guy like Roman Reigns, you know, you're going to kind of go into no man's land. And that's kind of what happened to me because I was just riding the wave, you know?
Yeah.
So look at like what Chris would do. So Chris was always evolving and coming up with different stuff, you know, new characters, twists on his character. And I kind of felt stuck with that character. Cause like, where can you really,
yeah. Yeah, you're sort of saddled with.
Yeah,
I mean, it almost is like one of the 95 gimmicks where it's like
kind of a shit deal. You know, yeah. You can change up your dancer, you can change up the type of dance you're doing, but you're still a fucking dancer. So,
yeah. Were you surprised at the reaction that you got, like the Monday Night Raw, your theme song going to number 11 on the UK charts?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised, man. I remember I was up in Maine doing like some tiling or something because I do construction, and I try to disconnect as much as possible. And I kept checking my Twitter, and it was like blowing up. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, everyone was doing it.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was a good time, man. And I'm glad that I don't know if anyone could do a better job of getting me over than Chris. You know.
Yeah.
Because he took a really shitty situation and really you know, did a really great job with it.
It sounds like he put a lot of thought and effort into it, yeah, which, so maybe, you know, not a lot of people would.
You know, I know he defends himself on all these podcasts and kind of like says he hated it. But, you know, if he worked Ryback, would we be talking about it now, honestly?
I doubt it.
Probably not. You know? Nothing against Ryan, but you know what I'm saying, though? Like,
Yeah. No, I mean, he was huge for a minute and then...
Yeah. Not saying that it wouldn't have been a great match, but I'm saying that it was so ridiculous and such a shitty situation that that's why we still talk about it, you know? So.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And it was a fun match, honestly.
Yeah.
Do you have anything going on that you want to plug? You have anything you want to talk about before we let you go?
Fuck, dude, I got so many signings and stuff lined up, but I don't even know how to put them over because I don't, they're written in a book of mine. But
Well, if you want to know where he's going, you're gonna have to break into his house in the middle of nowhere in Maine and look through his book.
But they advertise all that shit, so you'll see it on social media. But check me out. I think my handle's Dirty Dango now.
I think you're Dirty Dango on Insta. Yeah.
Yeah, I changed that. They made me change it. So.
Of course, yeah. you can't use that name anymore.
Nah, man. But you know, I had a good 14 years with WWE. So like, everyone's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, I appreciate that, but. I mean, how can you be sad about a 14-year run, man? I mean,
who wants to do the same job in the same place for that, like, for, you know, so 15, 20 years anyway? Like, there's something about going out and exploring new things.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go to Japan. It's been one of my dreams. And so hopefully I didn't, you know, hopefully I can get it.
Hell yes. Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. I would love to see that.
Yeah. So that's kind of one of my dreams, man. And, you know, wrestle some of my buddies I haven't seen in a while. You know, I'm really close with the Good Brothers and Heath and Rhino and just about everyone at TNA, Myers and Ryder. And they got a good roster down there too.
Yeah. Yeah, man. They've been really putting it together.
Yeah.
It's been like, there's been a lot of like good growth in professional wrestling.
It's really good right now. It really, really is. Ring of Honor is looking good. You know, I'm blessed, man, that I didn't get released in COVID because I felt bad for a lot of those. You know, a lot of my friends got released last April. Like, it's horrible. You know, you can't do shit. You just sit home for.
And especially considering, you know, like the kind of money that is in the company to sort of cite budget cuts is a little disingenuous at best.
Yeah, that was tough, man. I remember they fired like every.
It was crazy.
Yeah, I've been with the company for a long time. I've never seen them gut like talent and just departments, and they're just cleaning house right now. So I don't know what the future entails. But
there's a lot of speculation about a sale.
Yeah, I just don't see Vince. I don't see Vince selling his baby, man. I don't know.
That's sort of the feeling.
But I don't, you know. Yeah, the older I get, the more I know, the more I realize I don't know as much as I think I
do. Yep, absolutely, man. And well, I think on that note, I think that's a perfect note to end on.
Hey, guys, thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
I don't know. Thank you, man.
Yeah, we really appreciate your time.
Thanks,
guys. Absolutely. Have a good one.
All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Such Good Shoot. If you are on YouTube, please remember to like, subscribe, and ring that bell icon. Or subscribe to us on your favorite audio catcher. Or finally, if you're on Facebook, leave a comment, like the video, and make sure to share it out to all your friends. Until next time, we have been Such Good Shoot, and have a great day.